morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Monday, December 12th. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun outdoor reporter Jason Blevins about the plan to introduce up to 50 wolves over a 5-year period to Colorado's western slope. Before we begin, want to help support visual journalism at the Colorado Sun? The Colorado Sun's photographer, Olivia Sun, is a Report for America core member. Report for America is a nonprofit organization which places talented emerging journalists into local newsrooms. To learn more, visit coloradosun.com/RFA. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Colorado Springs residents considered themselves genteel and respectable from the beginning. Established by Denver and Rio Grande Railroad founder William Palmer in 1871, Little London contrasted with the territory's hardscrabble mining communities. Two young men, Charles L. Tutt and Spencer Penrose, officially partnered on this day in 1892 and went on to enjoy prosperous careers and lives, a success they shared with their fellow Colorado Springs residents. Childhood friends from wealthy Philadelphia families, Tutt and Penrose grew up with the city. Tutt arrived in the late 1880s and encouraged Penrose to come in December 1892 amid the gold mining craze near Cripple Creek. Hours after debarking from his train, Penrose got into a drunken fight at the country club, inspiring Tutt to remark, quote, "Colorado Springs now knows that Spencer Penrose has arrived." The two young men officially started their partnership 2 days after the fracas. Over the next few years, they invested in real estate, often alongside magnate Winfield Stratton. Tutt and Penrose made fortunes in mining and ore processing in Colorado and Utah, and parlayed those fortunes into railroads, ranches, and prize fights featuring Jack Dempsey. Tutt died in 1909, but Penrose carried on the partners' profitable and charitable work. Starting in the 1910s, Penrose poured his fortune into developing his adopted home of Colorado Springs. He built a road to the summit of Pikes Peak in 1915 and sponsored the first Pikes Peak hill climb the following year. In 1918, Penrose revitalized an old casino and hotel along a lake south of Colorado Springs into the Broadmoor, which remains the state's swankiest resort. Penrose opened the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo in 1926 and 11 years later founded the philanthropic El Pomar Foundation with his wife Julie. Penrose was interred in a memorial observation tower above the Mountainside Zoo following his death in 1939. Before we continue, a quick message. You can help the Colorado Sun receive a $5,000 matching grant. Now, through December 31st, the Sun will receive $5,000 in matching funds if it gains 42 new members for as little as $10 a month through the News Colorado Needs program. Visit coloradosun.com to join and learn more today. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you and with the Colorado Sun outdoor reporter, Jason Blevins. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Carol.
Thanks for talking to us again. I really was fascinated by this story that you had on coloradosun.com on Friday. And it's about how Colorado Parks and Wildlife and some other stakeholders are starting to prepare for the release of approximately 50 northern gray wolves that will be released in Colorado on the western slope, I believe, over the next 5 years, beginning in 2024. And I was hoping you could just explain to our readers a little bit about the process and what CPW is calling impact-based management of the wolves.
Sure. It's been a little more than 2 years since Colorado voters narrowly directed the Colorado Parks and Wildlife to reintroduce wolves in the western slope of Colorado by 2024. So it's been a couple of years, a bunch of in-person meetings, online meetings, surveys of state residents, these two different advisory groups, a stakeholder advisory group, a technical working group have been working for these 2 years, putting together this new plan. The draft plan dropped last week on Friday. It's 293-page plan, very comprehensive. And like I said, the plan is what they're calling impact-based management of wolves, which gives CPW a lot of flexibility. They're going to be able to kind of deal with individual conflicts between wolves and maybe livestock or ungulates or, you know, big game, and be able to deal with it kind of on a case-by-case basis. This is kind of the first time a state has taken the reins on a reintroduction effort. That's usually something that's handled by the federal government. But due to this ballot issue, we have the state kind of pushing this through here. So they're kind of laying out this initial plan. The idea is that we're going to start with somewhere between 30 and 50 wolves over a five-year span, maybe, you know, starting with 10 to 15 wild gray wolves every fall, early winter. They've identified some spots they want to kind of keep away from state borders and borders with tribal land. So given plenty of room for the animals to roam, they're going to have GPS collars on all the wolves. So be able to kind of track them and make sure they know where these animals are going to end up and kind of how they move. And really the whole idea here is that this is going to be an adaptive and reactive plan that gives kind of CPW a lot of sort of leeway as they hammer out sort of a new plan here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if they're going to be tracked, but it sounds like they all are going to be GPS collared, like you said. So as I recall, also, your reporting said that there was maybe nearly 50, like 47 public and in-person, and they were public meetings in-person and virtual since 2021. What were those meetings like? Who's advocating for this and who is cautious about it?
Well, you know, there's one side, you've got the wildlife advocates that are, you know, very keen to see this sort of keystone species restored in Colorado, brought back, kind of linking in some states in the Northern Rockies where wolves have been reintroduced. So kind of connecting, you know, more of their traditional terrain and hopefully, you know, having wolves here. And at the same time, you've got some concerns out, especially in agricultural concerns. Hunters and, you know, hunters are worried about how wolves might, you know, interact with big game and elk, moose, and deer. So there's a lot of concern, and they've kind of built that. And obviously ranchers have a tremendous concern over, you know, how wolves might predate on their cows, you know, and we've seen some instances of that already in Northern Colorado up in around Moffett. You know, ranchers have been losing their cattle to wolves that have already come down from Wyoming. So, you know, there's a lot of concern out here, and these two working groups, the technical working group, stakeholder advisory group, really hammered out pretty specific plans that allow for ranchers to kind of maybe use some, you know, education and hazing, you know, with non-lethal methods. And then eventually they will be allowed, if on a short-term response to an immediate issue, ranchers will be allowed to kill wolves that are threatening their livestock or their working animals.
Sure. And you bring up some of these incidences in Northern Colorado, Moffett County and whatnot. Our colleagues, Jen Brown and Hugh Carey, have reported on and documented that pretty heavily, a lot in 2022, for sure. And are there hard feelings on the part of, say, the ranchers and some of the hunters and whatnot, that particular measure was passed by voters, such a narrow margin, and the predominant number of votes in favor of this was it from metro areas, you know, from people who don't live with and deal with wolves?
Yeah, exactly. And that is, you know, an issue. And for sure, the wolf vote sort of highlighted this rural-urban divide. And I think these working groups, and you know, when they kind of came together and made this plan, they really wanted to bridge that gap and see how they can, you know, find ways to come together and, you know, protect the interests of ranchers and make sure that their livelihoods are protected. At the same time, you know, follow the rule of the people here who've asked for, you know, these species to be reintroduced. So it's a fine line. They've created programs that allow ranchers to be compensated if their livestock are killed by wolves, if their livestock are threatened by wolves and they start to lose weight, or the herds are, you know, coming in from winters a little leaner because they've been chased around by wolves. There's compensation platforms and ways that ranchers can be reimbursed for their losses from these wolves. So it's a pretty comprehensive plan. It's an impressive document. Like I said, 293 pages, and they really tried to cover a lot of different bases. And what's going to happen now is we're going to go around the state with four or five of these kind of public meetings, vet this plan, make sure that there's no serious omissions or something that needs to be readdressed. And then they're going to come back in February with sort of an ideal final plan for the Wildlife Commission, Parks and Wildlife Commission to make a vote on. And the idea is by, you know, May next year, we should have a pretty hard plan with definitive dates and deadlines and monitoring plans and reimbursement schedules and how this is all going to work out. And the idea is by the end of 2023, we'll have wolves in starting to flow into Colorado.
Yes, really interesting. And once that does start, where do they come from? Where are they introduced from?
This is part of that plan too. They looked really hard. They're going to do what they're calling hard hard captures. So they will be going up to these northern states, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, capturing wolves, making sure that they're healthy, flying them down, racing them down to Colorado, and releasing them in the same day. So that's, I thought that was pretty interesting too. There's not going to be a holding pen, which is sort of a soft release. They're going to make sure that the animals try to get, a decent size pack rolling and pick them up in Idaho, fly them down, make sure they're all healthy, and then cut them loose in Colorado by the time they land. So it's a one day thing. Those animals won't be, sedated or handled at all. So they'll be kind of, it's just quick. I thought that was pretty interesting, thinking about how, there's going to be quite a sense of urgency when you pick up these wolves and make sure that you get them on the ground by nightfall sort of thing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Do you have a sense of how that differs from other introductions?
There have been some where it's called soft opening. So they sort of have a penned in area where the wolves come in and the wolves sort of adjust in this penned area. They get to know each other and make sure that the pack is cohesive, and then they're released together in a group like that. That's one way. The CBW said that it's obviously very expensive. You have to have a giant fenced area and things like that. So I think the idea is that they are going to try to sort of move with expediency and do in single day capture and release.
It's going to be quite the travel day for those.
I know. Think
for
about
those wolves, really will be. And then, as you mentioned earlier, kind of this apex predator species. It'll be interesting as the years go on to see how they track them and if the pack starts reproducing and does really get established.
Yeah,
on the western slope.
2024, 2025 would be really interesting to see how these animals adapt to Colorado, how people adapt to wolves in the landscape, how agricultural interests adapt to it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fascinating process to watch.
Well, and like you said in your reporting, it's going to, it's managing the people is in some ways, perhaps more complicated than managing the wolves. So I can't wait to hear all the follow-up that I know you'll do on this. Thanks for talking to us, Jason, about this topic, and to everyone who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners at Pirate Audio. And if you have any thoughts or questions about the Daily Sunup, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And have a wonderful day out there, everyone. And I sincerely hope that you can join us for the next Daily Sunup.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. If all goes well, a Metropolitan State University professor could soon decode one of the great mysteries that make the West Nile virus such a difficult disease to track and predict. Bob Hancock hopes his ongoing work with live mosquitoes helps turn the tide on rising West Nile cases in Colorado. The past 2 years combined were the worst two-year stretch of infections since West Nile was first detected in Colorado 20 years ago. Hancock and researchers at Colorado State University and in the state's epidemiology office also are following the uptick in the sometimes deadly virus. Some new unemployment claims are taking up to 16 weeks to confirm, as a backlog from the pandemic slowed approving new claims this year. A 10 to 12-week delay has been going on since at least July. But the director of Colorado's Division of Unemployment Insurance says some claims are taking up to 16 weeks, depending on the complexity of the claim. The agency hired 20 new adjudicators to help clear the backlog, and it is also improving the technology so employers can respond electronically. Colorado agriculture and wildlife officials continue to struggle with an avian influenza outbreak they are calling the worst in state and U.S. history. The current bout has forced farmers to mass slaughter more than 4 million chickens from egg operations, and now wildlife officials worry the highly infectious disease may have contributed to a 15% to 20% drop in successful eagle nesting this year. Bird experts fear for dozens of year-round bald eagles in Colorado. State wildlife officials assume there are more dead bald eagles than the four confirmed so far in 2022 from carcass samples. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.